This fine October evening, I had a series of emails today from a criminal who was threatening me. What's his name, Larry? What?
Don't even go.
What was his name? What's his last name? Larry. What? Sinclair. That's right. Larry Sinclair, who, if you do a Google on this freak. Anyway, it's just getting weirder and weirder. He sent out a mass mailing, apparently, about his book about having sex and drugs with Obama before he was president. I wrote back and laced my email with a bunch of profanity, told him more or less where he could put his book, quote, quote. So then all of a sudden I get this series of crazed. You know, the right wing in this country is out of its mind. It's completely insane. But I posted a video. Who put that up? Was it Media Matters? No. If you go to MikeMalloy.com, at the top of the page, there's a video. Runs about 6.5 minutes, you got to see. About the destruction of this country by the right-wingers. It's a pretty sad state of affairs. I'm not sure what you're going to do about it. I'm not sure what I'm going to do about it either. Congressman Ron Paul, I got this from prisonplanet.com. Congressman Ron Paul has questioned why, despite his efforts to encourage the general public to get vaccinated against the H1N1 virus, President Barack Obama has refused to allow his own daughters to take the swine flu shot. Doom, 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 doom. Now, this is dated today at prisonplanet.com. He goes on to say, despite the fact that Obama on Friday declared a national emergency in response to H1N1 outbreak, he apparently doesn't deem it enough of a threat to have his two daughters vaccinated against the virus. Such double standards have led media pundits, you can imagine who, to call for Obama to get his daughters vaccinated on live television. In a campaign for liberty video message, former presidential candidate Ron Paul labeled the vaccination program a failure and slammed Obama for failing to follow the same advice he gave the nation. Paul said in the video, quote, it's interesting to note that the president's children have not gotten their shots, and the explanation for this is it hasn't been available to them. That's a little bit hard to buy when you think that probably anything the president wants could be available for their children. So in a way, he's made his decision not to give his children these inoculations. So if he has freedom of choice on this, I'd like to make sure all American people have a say. Well, guess what, you dork choke idiot? Malia and Sasha Obama have gotten their swine flu shots a week ago. The shots were administered by the White House doctor. Oh, my God. And then on the other side, the vaccinations are bound to raise questions about whether the Obama girls were given special treatment. This is New York Times blog site. The first thing I was reading is from crap-ass thing called prisonplanet.com. What the hell is that? Prison Planet. So New York Times says, The White House has been flooded with questions about whether the first family has been vaccinated against H1N1. The administration posted an answer on its website today. President Obama and his wife will, quote, wait until the needs of the priority groups, including young people under 24, pregnant women, people with underlying illnesses, have been vaccinated. They'll wait. Oh, goddamn, that's got to be a plot! However, Malia, 11, and Sasha, 8, fall within the priority groups, and they received their injections last week from the White House doctor who applied for the vaccine through the District of Columbia Department of Health, quote, using the same process as every other vaccination site in the district, end quote. Dina Iverson, a spokeswoman for the D.C. Health Department, says that while there are lines at the district's vaccination clinics, no one who is in a priority group has been turned away. And then, of course, the Times has to add, the vaccinations are bound to raise questions about whether the Obama girls were given special treatment. The White House may be trying to set a positive example amid concerns about the vaccine's safety. Sharing the news that the president has allowed his own daughters to receive the shots should assuage the fears of ordinary Americans who are wondering whether or not to get vaccinated. Well, obviously, this is a goddamn lie. We all know that. Right? I mean, Ron Paul says it's not true. And PrisonPlanet.com apparently says it's not true. Well, you know, it just Ron Paul is a freak anyway. You know, he's a Republican, a libertarian my ass. You know, he's a Republican or Republican my ass. He's a libertarian. Oh, my God. What is this? Wait a minute. What is this? What is this? I can't believe this. I'm not even going to read it. I just got another missive from the psychopath. Oh, my God. Here, Kathy, I'll send it to you. He refers to you in here, too. Oh, my God. What a nutcase. What a goddamn nutcase. See, this madness about this vaccine program just continues without abatement. It's not going to let up. The Obama girls got their shots last week. They're still alive. Holy God, they're still alive. It's alive. Meanwhile, the right-wing nutballs in this country continue. First, Ron Paul says they haven't gotten the shots. Why should anybody else? And then the right-wing geek jerks in this country pick it up and say, well, let's get them vaccinated on live television. Oh, my God. And then this freak is trying to peddle a book that he had sex and drugs with Barack Obama when he was, you know, that story was so shot down a couple of years ago when this freak came out with, you know, I had sex and drugs with Obama. There is a sickness in this country, you know, truth seekers. It's just spreading, and it's not the H1N1 virus. It's these right-wing crazy people who somehow got websites and microphones and radio programs and television. Well, not somehow. We know how and why. You know, corporate America's a desperate attempt to keep us looking over there while they steal us blind. Oh, well, 8 more Americans died in combat in southern Afghanistan today. That brings this month's total, and the month is not over, to 53. The deadliest month for Americans in the entire 8-year invasion occupation. September and October, back-to-back, were both deadlier months overall for NATO troops. These soldiers and Afghan civilians accompanying them were killed in several attacks involving multiple complex improvised bombs, according to a statement from the NATO-led coalition. What the Afghans are doing, and this is why the United States will not prevail in Afghanistan. You can send a million troops, Mr. Obama, you will not prevail. Because not only will they involve themselves in suicide attacks and IEDs, but the tactic used now in Afghanistan is to set off IEDs of tremendous force, way beyond anything used by the dummies in Iraq. And then when the explosion occurs and the wounded and those not hurt trying to get away, then the Afghan fighters jump up and open fire with weapons, with assault rifles. Little bit different from the way it was in Iraq. What the hell are we doing there?
Gives a damn about the future of children.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. The a spokeswoman for the international troops, one Captain Jane Campbell of the Navy, in referring to the incident today, said, quote, "A loss like this is extremely difficult for the families as well as for those who served alongside these brave service members," end quote. This is unbelievable. People make sick comments about, you know, Afghanistan is the Pashtun word for Vietnam. But this is incredible. The death rate just keeps going up. The kill rate. I don't know what the people who love war that are influencing the Barack Obama administration are thinking about. The Vietnamese defeated the United States because they were determined not to be defeated. They were. No matter what it took, they were going to defeat the Chinese, which they did. Defeat the French, which they did. Defeat the United States, which they did. There was no power on earth that would have forced the Vietnamese into any direction other than their own independence after a roughly 100-year struggle to get their independence. Who is advising Obama that the Afghans are any different? Who is telling Obama that the Afghans are like, the Iraqis who had lived under a national dictator that was supported by the United States for decades? The Afghans are independent. They have a tribal system of government. You can call them warlords, call them whatever you care to. But it's like what the United States, the crazy right wingers in this country have always wanted, a form of federalism, which is all these independent little states operating at their own pace. Well, that's Afghanistan. Who is it telling Obama that the Afghans can be defeated? And to what end? According to the Telegraph of the UK, the person who helped catalog fraud in the August 20th election in Afghanistan said tribal elders in southern provinces had already reported that officials from Hamid Karzai were preparing to rig the runoff coming November 7th. In other words, Harman Karzai's government has already begun arrangements to steal the second round of voting in the country's poll, presidential poll. The claims come as the International Crisis Group warned that without an overhaul of the election process and action against the most senior perpetrators of fraud, the vote rigging would be repeated. This is just like Bush in 2000 and Bush in 2004. It's like the Republican Party here. Hamid Karzai is doing the same thing. And why not? The Republicans who stole two elections here and ran this country into a ditch are now setting up the same scenario through their operatives in Afghanistan. The corporations, the American corporations, the pipeline companies, the oil and gas companies, they don't want Abdullah Karzai's opponent. They want Karzai. Why? Because Karzai is a street whore. No offense to sex workers. He's a unical street whore. That's all he is. And with Hamid Karzai in power, the oil companies and natural gas companies and energy companies and yada, yada, yada can have their way with him. And it's not just that either. Don't ever think it's just that. The U.S. has a strategic interest, a deep strategic interest, in maintaining military bases in Afghanistan. And, of course, it has to do with confronting this new Russian-Chinese alliance that is forming. So any talk about, peace and freedom for the Afghans is a filthy lie. Obama is either going to have to pull out or he's going to have to commit 600,000-700,000 American troops for the next 10 years, and even then, just as it was in Vietnam, even then, eventually, we lose.
There's these prisoners buried in the sand, mass murdered in containers. The fact is, in Afghanistan, more died than in New York, and most of them civilians. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. The king of death row, Texas, elected by his brother-in-law. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. Oil money, Enron, the American Empire!
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. You can take this with however many grains of salt you choose to do it. But F. William Engdahl is the author of Full Spectrum Dominance, a Totalitarian Democracy in the New World Order. He is a writer. He wrote that book. And he had something published at Global Research about a week ago. Somebody sent it to me. And he just points out that one of the most remarkable aspects of Obama's agenda is how little anyone has questioned in the media or elsewhere why at all the United States Pentagon is committed to a military occupation of Afghanistan. And Engdahl says there are two basic reasons, neither one of which can be admitted openly to the public at large. The two reasons are these. First, to restore and control the world's largest supply of opium for the world heroin market and to use the drugs as a geopolitical weapon against opponents, especially Russia. And also that control of the African drug market is essential for the liquidity of the bankrupt and corrupt Wall Street financial mafia. Yes. Okay. According To an official UN report, opium production in Afghanistan has risen dramatically since the downfall of the Taliban in 2001. More land is now used for opium in Afghanistan than for coca cultivation in all of Latin America. In 2007, 93% of the opiates on the world market originated in Afghanistan. And as Engdahl points out, it has been documented that Washington's handpicked, or they Washington handpicked, that would be Bush, the Hamid Karzai, a Pashtun warlord, long in the CIA service, brought him back from exile in the United States, created a Hollywood mythology, around his courageous leadership of his people. According to Afghan sources, Karzai is the opium godfather of Afghanistan today. There's apparently no accident that he was and is today still Washington's preferred man in Kabul. The second reason for our invasion and occupation is, according to Engdahl, the second reason the U.S. military will remain in Afghanistan long after the world has forgotten even who the mysterious Osama bin Laden and his alleged al-Qaeda terrorist organization is, or even if they exist, the second reason is as a pretext to build a permanent U.S. military strike force with a series of permanent U.S. air bases across Afghanistan. The aim of these bases is not to eradicate any al-Qaeda cells that may have survived in the caves of Tora Bora or to eradicate a mythical Taliban, which at this point, according to eyewitness reports, is made up overwhelmingly of local, ordinary Afghans fighting to rid their land once more of occupier armies as they did in the 80s against the Russians. The aim of the U.S. bases in Afghanistan is to target and be able to strike at the two nations which today represent the only combined threat to an American global imperium, to America's, as the Pentagon terms it, full spectrum dominance. And those two countries, of course, are Russia and China. The each one of those powers brings to the table, Engdahl writes, two essential contributions. China has the world's most robust economy, a huge young and dynamic workforce, an educated middle class. Russia, whose economy has not yet recovered from the destructive end of the Soviet era and of the primitive looting during the Yeltsin era, still holds essential assets for the combination. Russia's nuclear strike force and its military pose the only threat in the world today to U.S. military dominance. And as well, Russia holds the world's largest treasure of natural gas and vast reserves of oil urgently needed by China. These two powers are increasingly converging via a new organization they created in 2001 known as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO. That includes, as well as China and Russia, the largest Central Asian states of Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan. And the purpose of the alleged U.S. war against both Taliban and al-Qaeda is in reality to place its military strike force directly in the middle of the geographical space of this emerging SCO, Shanghai Cooperation Organization in Central Asia. Iran is a diversion. The main goal or target is Russia and China. And if you... he goes on to explain some other things, but... the National Security Advisor to President Obama, former Marine General James Jones, has made a statement, conveniently buried by the friendly U.S. media, about the estimated size of the present al-Qaeda danger in Afghanistan. Remember, we talked about this. Jones told Congress, quote, the al-Qaeda presence is very diminished. The maximum estimate is less than 100 operating in the country. No bases, no ability to launch attacks on either us or our allies, end quote. That means that al-Qaeda, for all practical purposes, does not exist in Afghanistan. And, This is crazy. As Engdahl goes out, he says, even in neighboring Pakistan, the remnants of al-Qaeda are scarcely to be found. The Wall Street Journal reports, quote, hunted by U.S. drones, beset by money problems, and finding it tougher to lure young Arabs to the bleak mountains of Pakistan, al-Qaeda is seeing its role shrink there and in Afghanistan, according to intelligence reports and Pakistan and U.S. officials. For Arab youths who are at al-Qaeda's primary, who are al-Qaeda's primary recruits, it's not romantic to be cold and hungry and hiding any longer. So, the U.S. National Security Council head, General Jones, admits there's essentially no al-Qaeda anymore in Afghanistan. You think it's time for more honest debate about the true purpose of sending more young people to die in Afghanistan? Jesus, God. So President Obama has his war council, and General McChrystal asked for his 80,000 troops, and the Pentagon really, you know, being the strike force for corporate America now, want, I'm sure, a lot more than 80,000, and, you know, off we go again. It just, it's going to happen, isn't it? Huh? Isn't it going to happen again? And now the word is out that Karzai's people are already rigging the second election. A former UN official from Afghanistan predicted fraud would be as widespread in the second round as in the first. The official said, quote, I don't think anything is going to be different. I don't know. Are the Independent Election Commission members who did it the last time and the Afghan National Army and the Afghan National Police and governors who were all complicit going to behave differently? I doubt it. End quote. Well, we'll know soon, won't we, huh? November 7th is the runoff election. Feel like things are out of control? Guess what? We have a treat for you at the bottom of the next hour. We do. Remember, we have Bob Alexander reached the end of the line with his moments that we have been reading on this program for 2.5 years. But he sent me an epilogue, and I want to share it with you. But it'll be the bottom of the next hour. Okay. Beck has a couple more notches in his belt. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle. Typically psychopathological Beth Limbaugh aficionado decided to kill his sister and brother-in-law because he thought they were just way too liberal, and hoping he'd eventually be able to adopt their kids and raise them right-wing. This, oh my God. This is from today. San Francisco Chronicle, a Sacramento County man was convicted today of 2 counts of murder with special circumstances for fatally stabbing and bludgeoning his sister and her husband in El Cerrito, a crime he said was meant to rid the world of two evil people. The jury was out for 45 minutes, brought back the verdict. He will be sentenced to either death or life in prison without the possibility of parole after a penalty phase in his trial. For killing his sister, Julie, and her husband, Paul, about a year ago. The man, Wyckoff, Edward Wyckoff, did not argue with prosecutors' assertions that he had killed the couple because he thought they were too liberal, were too easy on their children, and had invited him over for Christmas. He had hoped to adopt his nephew and niece after the killings. During the trial, Wyckoff testified that he deserved an award for killing the couple. So, the right-wing pundits strike again. Another notch in Glenn Beck's belt. 2 notches, as a matter of fact. 2 more people dead because of Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh. It doesn't stop. They promote murder. What they're promoting is the murder of the president. That's the prize these son of a bitches are really after. But they'll take a couple like this who's too liberal in the waiting period.
darkness any longer.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So, F. William Engdahl writing at Global Research about the drug trade in Afghanistan, why we're really there. How about this? This is in tomorrow's New York Times. Oh, Jesus Christ. This is in tomorrow's New York Times. Ahmed Wali Karzai, the brother of the Afghan president, Hamid Karzai, and a suspected player in the country's booming illegal opium trade, gets regular payments from the CIA and has for much of the past 8 years, according to current and former American officials. The financial ties and close working relationship between the intelligence agency, CIA, and Mr. Karzai raise significant questions about America's war strategy, which is currently under review at the White House. The ties to Mr. Karzai have created deep divisions within the Obama administration. The critics say the ties complicate America's increasingly tense relationship with President Hamid Karzai's brother, who... Oh, God. The CIA, who has struggled to build sustained popularity among Afghans and has long been portrayed by the Taliban as an American puppet. No, really? The CIA's practices also suggest that the United States is not doing everything in its power to stamp out the lucrative Afghan drug trade, a major source of revenue for the Taliban. Not doing everything in its power. The United States military is not a branch of the Drug Enforcement Administration, is it? No. The U.S. military is used to go break things up, blow things up, and kill people. That is the mission. That is the prime directive of the United States military. Go kill and destroy until the enemy surrenders. Period! Some American officials argue, this is the New York Times tomorrow, argue that the reliance on Ahmed Wali Karzai, the most powerful figure in a large swath of southern Afghanistan, where the Taliban insurgency is strongest, undermines the American push to develop an effective central government that can maintain law and order and eventually allow the United States to withdraw. Aren't you sick of this? Aren't you? The Times goes on, some American officials said that the allegations of Mr. Karzai's role in the drug trade were not conclusive. One American official familiar with the intelligence said, there's no proof that Ahmed Karzai's involvement in involved in drug trafficking. Certainly nothing that would stand up in court. Times goes on. Now, with more Americans' lives on the line, the relationship with Mr. Karzai, the drug pusher, is sparking anger and frustration among American military officers and other officials in the Obama administration. They say that Mr. Ahmed Karzai, his suspected role in the drug trade, as well as what they describe as the mafia-like way that he lords over southern Afghanistan, makes him a malevolent force. This is our puppet president's brother, truth seekers. Hello? A senior American military officer in Kabul said, quote, hundreds of millions of dollars in drug money are flowing through the southern region and nothing happens without the regional leadership knowing about it. Like most of the officials in this story, he spoke on the condition of anonymity because of the secrecy of the information. American officials say that Afghanistan's opium trade, the largest in the world, directly threatens the stability of the Afghan state by providing a large percentage of the money the Taliban needs for its operations, and also by corrupting Afghan public officials to keep the trade, to help the trade flourish. Yeah. Okay. And what this story leaves out, of course, is the fact, and it is a fact, and you know it's a fact, and I know it's a fact. Remember when George Herbert Walker Bush was busted with the information that his buddy and CIA operative in Panama. What the hell was his name? The Panamanian dictator, Noriega. You know, Noriega had the same role as the Karzai brothers in Afghanistan. Noriega had the role in Panama. His job was to make it easier to transship drugs, cocaine, from Colombia into the United States with the blessings of the United States government, the CIA. Remember who the head of the CIA was for a while there, right? George Herbert Walker Bush. Now, there have been books written about this. Honest books. So when it finally turned out that the cat was out of the bag, so to speak, what happened to Mr. Noriega? Oops, oh my, we invaded his country and tried to kill him. Oops, oh my, he surrendered with a lot of Catholic officials watching. Oops, and now where is he? Is he still in a prison in Miami? So here we go again. Here we go again. How many people have been warning us about the international drug trade, how it provides the fluidity for so many criminal operations around the globe, and especially here? I mean, for God's sake. Who's the guy who had the website, Kathy? Cop V CIA. What was his name? I used to have him on. Michael Ruppert. If you've been following stuff, you know who Ruppert is. He had to leave the country. He's a former L.A. cop. And all of a sudden, he noticed, as an L.A. cop, this new drug on the streets of Los Angeles years ago, called crack. Crack? At the very same time that the CIA was smuggling cocaine into the country. And Michael Ruppert, he wrote about it. He tried to warn people about it. He resigned as an L.A. police officer, I believe, or retired, one of the two. And eventually had to leave the country. This country. I don't think he's come back, has he? So here we go again. So put that in your smoke and pipe it, so to speak. Eh? The brother of Harman Karzai, according to intelligence, is a CIA operative who runs the Afghan drug trade. Son of a bitch!
Are you behind?
Seven past the hour. In the Washington Post today, and oddly enough, not on the evening news as far as I know, a foreign service officer and former Marine captain has, U.S. official has resigned. He's the person who has resigned because of the Afghan war. Matthew Ho, H-O-H, joined the Foreign Service early this year, U.S. Foreign Service. He was exactly the kind of smart, civil military hybrid the Obama administration was looking for to help expand its development efforts in Afghanistan. He's a former Marine Corps captain with combat experience. He also served in uniform at the Pentagon as a civilian in Iraq, State Department. By July, he was a senior U.S. civilian in Zabul province, which in Afghanistan, a Taliban hotbed. But last month, in a move that has sent ripples all the way to the White House, Mr. Ho, 36, became the first U.S. official known to resign in protest over the Afghan war, which he had come to believe simply fueled the insurgency. He wrote September 10th in a four-page letter to the department's head of personnel, quote, I've lost understanding of and confidence in the strategic purpose of the United States presence in Afghanistan. I have doubts and reservations about our current strategy and planned future strategy, but my resignation is not based not upon how we are pursuing this war, but why and to what end, end quote. Richard Holbrooke, the Obama administration's special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan, said, quote, we took his letter very seriously because he was a good officer. We all thought that given how serious his letter was, how much commitment there was in his prior track record, we should pay close attention to him, end quote. Holbrooke says he doesn't share that view, that the war isn't worth the fight. Holbrooke said, quote, I agreed with much of his analysis, but if he really wanted to affect policy and help reduce the cost of war and lives and treasure, why not be inside the building rather than outside where you can get a lot of attention, but you won't have the same political impact? Yeah, that's... Captain Ho said, I'm not some peacenik, pot-smoking hippie who wants everyone to be in love. He said of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, quote, there are plenty of dudes who need to be killed. I was never more happy than when our Iraq team whacked a bunch of guys. But many Afghans, he wrote in his resignation letter, are fighting the United States largely because its troops are, because our troops are there. A growing military presence in villages and valleys where outsiders, including other Afghans, are not welcome. And where the corrupt U.S.-backed national government is rejected. He said the United States is asking its troops to die in Afghanistan for what is essentially a far-off civil war. Ooh, where have we heard that before? Ho said he decided to speak out publicly because, quote, I want people in Iowa, people in Arkansas, people in Arizona to call their congressmen and say, listen, I don't think this is right, end quote. He went on to say, quote, I realize what I'm getting into, what people are going to say about me. I never thought I would be doing this, end quote. He said he spent a lot of time, he spent weeks thinking about and drafting his resignation letter. He said, quote, I felt physically nauseous at times, end quote. Oh, well, it just goes on and on and on. So the first, this is in today's Washington Post, the first U.S. Foreign Service officer and former Marine captain, combat captain, says, I resign in protest over what we're doing. Over, you know, what the mission is. There is no mission. There is no mission. Irish Dave wrote, Mike, if Afghanistan, that would be General McChrystal, believes the national security of the United States is threatened by the Taliban, let him appear in Congress to request a declaration of war. On the other hand, if they think the national interest of the U.S. is in danger, let them define that and pay for protecting it. You know, the ones whose interest is threatened. Yeah, you know, this is what I've been talking about. This is the way Obama can handle this. Just go ahead and say, all right, look, I'm going to return to the Congress the power that was taken away from it with the War Powers Act going all the way back to what? I don't know, Korea, Vietnam, I don't even know. But we have not fought a war with a declaration of war as required by the Constitution since December 10th, 11th, 1941! Come on, you constitutional purists, you right-wing rabbit asses. Come on, demand that it go back to the Congress. Go ahead.
Well, not that part goes back to the Congress, Mike. We're not really sincere about the Constitution.
Yeah, why not do that? Why not go before the Congress? We can, you know, both of them can go. General Stan, Stan's the man, and President Obama, and they can sit there on television and address the American people and, you know, a joint session of Congress and say, okay, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, all 100 of them, are a severe and serious and mortal threat to the security, safety, and well-being of the United States. Therefore, paragraph A, section B, number one, we need a declaration of war against these murderous international bastards. Why not do that, boys? Why not? Huh? Why not? Why not ask the Congress of the United States to declare war? Why not? because that's why not. Oh my God, just gets sicker and sicker and sicker, doesn't it? Oh, by the way, Iraq, this is according to the Guardian, the UK, Iraq has started lobbying for approval to again become a nuclear player. 19 years after British and American warplanes destroyed Saddam Hussein's last two reactors, that's according to the Guardian of the UK. And before that, way back in 1981, remember when the Israelis bombed Iraq's, at the time, three reactors, Tammuz 1, Tammuz 2, and Tammuz 3, or Tammuz 14? Remember that? So the Israelis got them in 1981, we got them in 1990, and now the Iraqi government has approached the French nuclear industry about rebuilding at least one of the reactors that was bombed at the start of the first Gulf War. The Iraqi government has also contacted the IAEA and United Nations to seek ways around resolutions that ban Iraq's reentry into the nuclear field. Iraq says it envisions that a reactor would be used for... What? For what? What? Research purposes. Well, wait, that's what the Iranians say. Now, Iraq, right? What have we heard? Well, Iran doesn't need nuclear reactors because they have lots of oil, and Iraq doesn't? Oh, God. The science and technology minister, Waeed Fahmy, told The Guardian of the UK, quote, after the dissolution of the regime, the Saddam regime, we did not have an industry, a nuclear industry, but we have become more and more conscious of the need for nuclear technology. This was raised several months ago with the relevant bodies, end quote. Minister Fahmy insists Iraq has, quote, only peaceful applications in my, unquote, for, in my for nuclear program, quote, including the health sector, agriculture, and water treatment. Okay. What about the Iranians? Well, can we do a break? I feel like somebody opened up the little capsule of sanity I carry along with me, and it's just about all leaked out.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah. 21 past the hour. All right. Here's the info. General Noriega has POW status, and he was, quote, released, end quote, from prison 2 years ago, but continues to be held in U.S. custody pending appeals on an extradition request from France on money laundering charges. He also faces a 40-year sentence in Panama after conviction in absentia for murder, but prefers to go there instead of France. The Bush crime family has been insisting he go to France, where he faces a 10-year sentence. No news articles appear in Google since January 2009. Yeah, he's a non-person. He's been pushed down the memory hole. Thanks, Bruce. So that's what happened with Noriega. Yeah, he's still being held. He served his time, right? But surprise, surprise, he's still being held. I just can't get over this. You know, first the article that was at Global Research by the man who wrote the book on what the real goal is: permanent U.S. dominance. Who are they kidding? About the goal of the U.S. military in Afghanistan is to reassert control of the Afghan trade. William Engdahl, who wrote the book, where is it? Oh, come on, Mike. Yeah, the book is Full Spectrum Dominance, which is the Pentagon term, : Totalitarian Democracy in the New World Order. Totalitarian Democracy. So, you know, Engdahl writes that, and he wrote it a couple of days ago, I guess. It just came to me today, came to me yesterday. And now the New York Times is reporting that the brother of the Afghan president gets regular payments from the CIA, and he's a major player in the country's drug trade. You know, nothing changes. It's just except the language and the area of the planet. That's all. That's all. Remember when, who was the guy? Gosh, I, it's hard to remember all these war crimes. The guy that was shot down, by the Sandinistas, who he was running guns into, Nicaragua and carrying, and then on to Panama, where he was picking up drugs. And made the mistake of flying back. It's pretty hard not to fly back across Nicaragua if you're in Panama. But he should have known better. What was that guy's name? He was shot down by the Sandinistas. And, you know, he survived. He had a broken leg or something. Kind of a clerk-looking guy, if you know what I mean. And in his shirt pocket was George Herbert Walker Bush's private phone number in the White House. What was the guy's name? Somebody send me that guy's name. You know what I'm talking about. The one who was shot down that, and then we immediately had to put, all kinds of misinformation. Now we, the Bush crime family, the first one, and General John Singlaub and Oliver North and, Admiral Poindexter and all those thug bastard, murderers had to immediately start putting out phony stories. What was his name? Oh, man. Come on. Nobody has sent me the name of that guy. Anyway, you know, everything remains the same. It's drug trafficking. It's lots of money. And the real goal is to control the drug trafficking so that you can control the money so that you can do whatever you want to do. Jesus, God. And what about Joe Lieberman? Yesterday, when Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid announced there would be a public option in the Senate version of health care reform legislation, you'll notice last night, Eugene Hassenfuss. Thank you. Tim sent it in. Thank you. Eugene Hassenfuss, that was the guy's name, who was shot down and had Herbert Walker Bush's phone number. Harry Reid comes out yesterday and announces there would be a public option in the Senate version of health care reform legislation. Reid said he was confident that he could hold his caucus together and get the 60 votes needed so there would be no filibuster. Well, then today, Joe Lieberman announced that he will not support, or he will support a Republican filibuster unless the public option is removed from the bill. How about this? This rat son of a bitch Lieberman. How about this guy, huh? Well, he's from Connecticut, which is the home base for a lot of these insurance companies. Lieberman. The majority of the American people want a public option. And Lieberman, one guy, this schmuck, this is why the Democrats in Connecticut threw his ass on the street, just kicked him to the curb. The independents didn't elect or reelect him. It was the Republicans who voted for him. But, you know, the Democrats in Connecticut said, be gone. Feh, get out of here. Scram. So now, Joe Lieberman, the revenge of the nerd, he's going to derail health insurance reform in the United States of, by God, America, in order to satisfy the people who own his useless, bony ass, the insurance industry. How about that, huh? Epilogue when we come back.
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Yeehaw! 26 before the hour. Should we play the music for an epilogue? I guess we should. Start the music, maestro. That's the theme music for A Moment with Bob, a segment which is no longer part of this program because Bob has decided to not write Moments with Bob anymore. However, he sent me today an epilogue. Hey, Mike. I know. I said the last one was the last one, but I've received a bunch of email from people wanting to know why I don't write Moments anymore. This is the best I can come up with. Have you seen the video from Media Matters, The Rise of the Conservative Media on Today's Crooks and Liars yet? If you look at that video, it is why our side is losing, or in my opinion, has lost. We don't have the Fairness Doctrine. The opportunity to confront the right on national television like Joseph Welch or the national clout of Edward R. Murrow and his program See It Now. See It Now focused on a number of controversial issues in the 50s, but it is best remembered as a show that criticized McCarthyism and the Red Scare, contributing, if not leading, to the political downfall of Senator Joseph McCarthy. On March 9, 1954, Murrow, Fred Friendly, and their news team produced a half-hour See It Now special entitled A Report on Senator Joseph McCarthy. Murrow used excerpts from McCarthy's own speeches and proclamations to criticize the senator and point out episodes where he had contradicted himself. The broadcast contributed to a nationwide backlash against McCarthy and is seen as a turning point in the history of television. It provoked tens of thousands of letters, telegrams, and phone calls to CBS headquarters running 15-1 in favor of a backlash against McCarthy. Murrow offered McCarthy a chance to appear on See It Now to respond to the criticism. McCarthy accepted the invitation and made his appearance 3 weeks later, but his rebuttal only served to further decrease his already fading popularity. In the program following McCarthy's appearance, Murrow commented that the senator had, quote, made no reference to any of the statements of fact that we made, end quote, and contested the personal attacks made by the junior senator from Wisconsin against himself. End quote, end quote, end quote. From Wikipedia. Well, today's corporatocracy-owned media would not have allowed Murrow's See It Now program or the exchange between Joseph Welch and Joe McCarthy to be televised. Joseph Welch, he was the head of the council, the head counsel, for the United States Army while it was under investigation by Joseph McCarthy's Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations for Communist Activities. The investigation, which was known as the Army-McCarthy hearings, was underway when television was first becoming a common fixture in the United States, in the United States households. This was the first time many Americans were able to see McCarthy. On June 9, 1954, the 30th day of the hearings, McCarthy accused Fred Fisher, one of the junior attorneys at Welch's firm, of association while in law school with the National Lawyers Guild, a group which J. Edgar Hoover sought to have the Attorney General designate as a communist front organization. Welch wrote off Fisher's association with the National Lawyers Guild as a youthful indiscretion and went after McCarthy for dragging the young man's name before a nationwide television audience with no prior warning or previous agreement to do so. Welch said, quote, "Until this moment, Senator, I think I've never really gauged your cruelty or your recklessness. Fred Fisher is a young man who went to the Harvard Law School and came into my firm and is starting what looks to be a brilliant career with us. Little did I dream you could be so reckless and so cruel as to do an injury to that lad. It is true that he will continue to be with Hale and Dorr, my law firm. It is, I regret to say, equally true that I fear he shall always bear a scar needlessly inflicted by you. If it were in my power to forgive you for your reckless cruelty, I would do so. I would like to think I am a gentle man, but your forgiveness will have to come from someone other than me." End quote. When McCarthy then tried to go on the attack once more, Welch stepped in again and famously rebuked, "Senator, may we not drop this? We know he belonged to the Lawyers Guild. Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator. You've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?" McCarthy tried to ask Welch another question about Fisher, and Welch cut him off. "Mr. McCarthy, I will not discuss this further with you. You have sat within 6 feet of me and could have asked me about Fred Fisher. You have seen fit to bring it out, and if there is a God in heaven, it will do neither you nor your cause any good. I will not discuss it further. I will not ask Mr. Cohn any more questions. You, Mr. Chairman, may, if you will, call the next witness." End quote. At that point, the gallery erupted in applause. 55 years after Joseph Welch exposed Joe McCarthy in front of a nationwide audience, we do not have the wherewithal to expose the right-wing ideologues and their paymasters in the corporatocracy. Mainstream media, lacking an Edward R. Murrow, refuses to unmask the liars because their corporate owners forbid it. We do not have the apparatus to combat the right. We've got a handful of liberals on the radio and Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann on television. The right-wing media lies 24/7, but we do not have a fairness doctrine. And a nationwide 24/7 liberal media countering their lies. Someone to explain to the Fox News zombies that they are listening to and are believing in garbage. The right-wing ideologues of today are well protected by the corporatocracy. The superb video produced by Media Matters will not be seen by Fox News zombies. It will not be the topic around the water cooler in offices across the country. We've lost because the corporatocracy sank almost $500 million into Fox News in the first 5 years of operation. Let me repeat that. They were willing to lose $100 million a year for 5 years. They've got an unlimited budget with media outlets coast to coast and border to border. They work 24/7. They're on the job full time. Their agenda is to destroy the country. And because we don't have the money or the coverage, we can only counter them part time. As long as we do not have the ability to confront and expose the right wing, as long as we can't get right up to them and say, "At long last, have you left no sense of decency," in front of a nationwide audience, we lose. And that's why I don't write moments anymore. Regards, Bob. Now, the video he's talking about is posted at my website. Just go to MikeMalloy.com. It's right there. It's right at the top. It's, how long is it, Kathy? About 6 minutes, 6.5 minutes. Wasn't it The Twilight Zone that had an epilogue? Was it The Twilight Zone or One Step Beyond or... Joe Lieberman told reporters today, I told Senator Reid that I'm strongly inclined, I haven't totally decided, but I'm strongly, somebody bring me a pickle. I'm strongly inclined to vote to proceed to the health care debate, even though I don't support the bill that he's bringing together, because it's important that we start the debate on health care reform, because I want to vote for health care reform this year. But I also told him that if the bill remains what it is now, I will not be able to support a cloture motion before final passage. Therefore, somebody call Hadassah. I've got a gas here. I will try to stop the passage of the bill. Good God. I don't know. You know, the Democrats threw me out. Hey, the bastards. So I get back at them this way. What? I don't care. I don't care. I can retire to Israel. They have single payer there. You didn't know? Jesus, what's wrong with you schmucks? So the attempt to get 60 votes, Reid needs. He needs 60 votes in order to choke off cloture. Lieberman doing this, it's payback, and payback is always a bitch. We know that. But it wasn't the House Democrats who threw his ass to the street. It was the Democratic voters in Connecticut, where this schmuck used to represent the state as a Democrat. A Democratic senator until he went nuts. And then the Democrats said, no, screw you, you're out of here. So he becomes an independent, he runs, and the Republicans, har, get him elected. So he can stand there and say, I don't know. I'm not going to do this. No, tell Senator Reid, I don't care. I don't care. Somebody get Hadassah on the phone. Hadassah, oi. I got the thing in my stomach again. I don't know. Jesus.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. There's a couple of big decisions that Barack Obama has to make in the next few days, right? The national health, it's not his decision. Whether or not he's going to lobby for his idea of national health insurance reform, or if he's going to sign whatever the debate in the House and the Senate, is it both? I think it's both. Begins, next week, this week? I don't know. It's just going to be crazy. I mean, did you ever think that corporate America, at least where it concerns the health insurance industry, would have such a stranglehold? This is like AIPAC has a stranglehold on no matter what Israel does in the Middle East, the United States Senate and House will not condemn them. Will not. No matter what the pharmaceutical industrial complex or the health industrial complex does, the United States House and Senate will not rein them in. Will not. No No matter what the weapons industry does, the House and the Senate will continue to fund it, will continue to fund it. Did you ever think it would come to this? When you were a kid in school and used to learn that stuff about how laws are how laws are passed. Oh, my God. What the process is, the legislative process. Remember those graphs and charts? Oh, Jesus, I remember those. We had to memorize them. You know, somebody introduces an idea and it goes to a subcommittee, and then the subcommittee sends it to another subcommittee, and then it goes to a committee, and then there's hearings, and then there's a vote in the committee, and if it passes, then it goes to the full House or Senate, and then there's a vote, and there's debate, and then if it passes, blah, 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 and then it goes, same thing in the Senate, and finally, if it passes the House and the Senate, then they have a joint resolution committee, and they get together. Remember all that garbage? Remember when you used to sit in your civics class and go, Jesus Christ, why do I have to learn this? I can't do this. This is making my head hurt. And now it's all irrelevant. It doesn't even exist anymore. Isn't that a bitch, huh? Can you believe that happened in your lifetime? How about that? And now we have nonsense like both Bush and Obama bailing out just hundreds of billions of dollars to these predatory capitalist bloodsuckers who are too big to fail? What? You know, it'd be nice if somebody decided our school system was too big to fail. Right, you know, the government schools. Or if our health care ideas were too big to fail, you know, wanting to get decent medical care to all Americans and bump up the life expectancy a little bit, you know. Never mind. Did you think this would happen in your lifetime? I never did. I really didn't. You know, I've said before, I came up believing the lies. I really did believe the lies. I really did. You couldn't have found a more devout, and that's the proper word, a devout flag waver than me all those years ago. Well, it wasn't so long ago. Hell, I even remember in the 67 war, just cheering on Israel, just like, kick ass, boys! Go, go, go! What was his name? The guy with the eye patch? Moshe Dayan? Wasn't he a figure, huh? Moshe. Moshe, go, Moshe, go! Kill, bomb, strafe! And all the stuff about, you know, how laws are made in this country. And I honestly believed that corporate America had the best interests of Americans at heart, even though I grew up in a completely, totally unionized town. I mean, you had to have a union card to take a dump. I mean, it was that unionized. It was that unionized. It really was. And it was great, you know. One person in the family, usually dad, go to work and be able to do everything. You know, the unions. You remember unions? Huh? Remember all that? And I thought the unions and labor, this is before I realized about the, you know, Henry Ford's thugs and Lindbergh wanting to join up with the Nazis. And, you know, I was so innocent. Were you innocent? Oh, my God. But I honestly believed as a kid, I waved the flag and went to the parades. And, you know, I thought, well, corporate America and labor America, they want the same thing. This is back in the day when the average executive earned 40 times the average shop floor worker. And that was a lot of money, 40 times. Woo, man, that's really something. What is it now? 400 times? 700 times? A million times? Doesn't matter. But, I believed it. I really did. And I thought corporate America and union labor were working together, marching into the future. You know, it reminded me of those old Soviet posters, you know, with everybody looking off to the left or the right of the poster with this beatific look on their face. And the guys had muscular arms and the women had big boobs. And they were all like, yes, marching on to the future. Ha ha. You remember that? Oh, my God. What do we tell the kids now, huh? What do we tell the kids now? Oh, Jesus. Maybe it's time to move someplace and open up the Vicuna Ranch. Can you eat those ugly bastards? If they Vicuna, don't they look like llamas? Isn't that what a Vicuna is? I don't know. What's a Vicuna? Is it related to a snipe? A Vicuna coat? I mean, isn't there such a... Right, you raise Vicunas. They're like llamas. They're like those things with the long necks, and they live up in the Himalayas and in the Andes. And you can eat them. Alpacas, yeah, they're cousins. All right, listen, let's do some phone calls when we come back, all right? The number here is 877-996-2556. Give us a holler. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. If you dare... Interesting email from Bruce, who was listening to, listening to me whine a minute ago, and he writes, "Yeah, we don't have Fox News, and if we don't get a fair shake from the corporate media, yeah, it's a bitch to fight Goliath. Have you ever seen an 18th century printing press demonstrated? It's not much faster than chiseling it in stone. People printed pamphlets on these presses. When doing so, could get you hanged. They defeated the most powerful military in the world with those pamphlets." Maybe it will get to the point where passing a podcast from hand to hand will get you hanged. But what choice do we have? Well, I get your point. There is a difference, though. Come on, Bruce. You can't simplify it like that. You really can't. There's no such thing as global media back then either. I mean, yeah, pamphlets. Woo! Do you know how long it took to get one of those pamphlets from here to England? What, 3 weeks? A month? Do you know how long it took to get one of those pamphlets just among the 13 colonies? No, I get your point, but different time, man. Different place, different, whole different thing. If there would have been a Fox News back in those days, this country would have remained royalist. It would have. It would have remained a British colony with the appointment of an 18th century Rupert Murdoch to be the proconsul for the British government. But I take your point. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. Hope you're well and everybody there as well.
Yeah.
Just a couple quick words about Joe Lieberman.
Yeah.
As he was coined by Sam Feeder. They need to show this man the door as far as the caucus goes and strip him of his chairmanship of whatever committee he is and just say, you know, shoot. Go across the hall. We don't need you.
They really should. I mean, I'm so tired of this jerk. It's one thing to get revenge on the people who turned your ass out of office, but you know the Democrats in Congress didn't do anything. They didn't say to him, "Okay, Joe, You know, we don't like you and your breath stinks you know, we think your wife is a freak. Nobody said any of that to him. What happened was the voters turned him out. So he gets into Congress having the Republicans put him in, even though he voted, you know, he ran as an independent. And now he sits there with this sharp stick of his and keeps poking real Democrats in the eyes. What the hell is wrong with this guy?
Yeah, I seriously don't understand any of his motives, if anyone does, except maybe to, you know, run as some sort of neo-independent for the Republican or what's left of the Republican Party in 12. I'm a little old for that stuff. I really don't know.
Yeah.
It's just a total mystery. But get him out of there.
Yeah,
of there.
I hear you loud and clear. Thanks,
yeah.
Thanks,
and
Steve.
Just one last thing.
Yeah,
on,
yeah.
On,
sure.
On the quote libertarian unquote Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
demanding that we know that the president's children have been vaccinated or not,
mm-hmm.
as some sort of gesture of his honesty. Blah blah blah. It's none of his damn business.
Well, it isn't, and if anybody, you see, that's a right to privacy.
Exactly, exactly what you were talking about last night.
Yeah, you
it's
know,
totally a subjective decision by their parents.
By the parents,
but nobody else's business. And you know, if you know what, if President Obama got on the TV and said, "Okay, I'm taking my H1N1 shot," then they would criticize him for a photo op.
Yeah, well, or for jumping to the head of the line.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
You know, these right-wing bastards, you can't do or say anything when you're dealing with people who are schizophrenic.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with people who are schizophrenic with delusions. The way every single Republican in America is, and especially Republicans in media, these right-wing bastards, when you deal with that, there is no way that you can deal with the schizophrenic on any level of reality. If you say it's brown, they'll say it's white. If you say, okay, it's white, they'll say, no, it's not. I said it was brown. They're sick bastards. Hey, thanks, Steve. I appreciate you checking in. No, you can't deal with schizoid people. Jesus Christ. You know, I've known a few, and inside and outside of institutions. In my old neighborhood in Atlanta, back in the early 80s, when people were turned out of mental hospitals, and the promise was there would be group homes, and of course nobody funded it. You know, the Reagan bastards never funded that. Neither did the Carter people. But there was, you know, in my old neighborhood, there were just an awful lot of, all of a sudden, street people who were obviously schizophrenic. I say obvious if you had any working knowledge, even a little bit, of the DSM-3, I guess it was back then. People who were just raving into the air about all kinds of demons and witches and crazy people and you know, that they had these enormously animated conversations with. And yet, you know, my son at the time, my son Chris was like six. He's 30 now, 31 soon. He was 6 years old, and we would go bike ride in the neighborhood, and you know, he didn't know from crazy people, and he would just go right up and talk to him, and they would talk to him just like he's a normal little kid. Oh, hi, little boy. Aren't you cute? Is that your bicycle? Is that your daddy back there looking at me kind of funny? Hi, daddy. Don't look at me funny. You know, so it just crazy 1 second, able to communicate the next. It's just pretty maddening, isn't it? Tom's in Las Vegas. Hey, Tom.
Hey, oh, Mike, I'm glad I got a hold of you. I've been listening to you for about a year.
Yeah?
No, I'm going to tell you something. You tell it like it is. And, okay, now, what I want to talk about is other people I know, and I've heard other people on the radio talking about these freaking credit card companies, which, you know, I am one of the members of a credit card company, and I don't want to mention any names, but this is the one. Remember the story how the president of this company went up to see George Bush on the weekend and got something like $15 billion.
Now, what was that? They went to see Bush and got 15. What do you mean? You lost me there. Do it again, Tom.
Okay. In other words, this is a government bailout company.
Which?
Can I mention the name?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay, Citibank.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, now they send me a letter. Now, my old interest rate was like 17%. So they send me a letter, and they tell me that they're going to raise my rate to 29%.
Yeah.
Now, they use this word, this key word I've been hearing a lot lately, called opt-out. You know? You've heard that, you know?
Uh-huh.
So in other words, what they're trying to say is that, you know, they can raise my interest rate, but if I don't like that, I can call them up, and they'll keep going. You know, I keep paying them off at the same rate. But then when my card expires in 2011, they'll no longer give me any more credit.
Right.
Know?
Well, let me suggest something, Tom. I'm not your financial advisor, but, you know, if Citi was charging you 17% to begin with, you ought to take that card and cut it into a million little pieces and put it in an envelope and send it to them and tell them, goodbye forever. Hey, Tom, I got to leave there. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers. The hour. Now, you want some irony? Matt sent this in to me. This is from April 1st. Yeah, April Fool's Day. April 1st, 2006. 3.5 years ago. The New York Times reports that Joe Lieberman did not command the attention or respect of his audience at a fundraising event in Connecticut Thursday night. Here's the way they reported it. Three times on Thursday night, Senator Joseph I. Lieberman asked the crowd of 1,700 for quiet during his remarks at the State Democrats' annual Jefferson Jackson Bailey fundraising dinner. "Shh," he told the guests, but rather than interrupting him with applause, many were ignoring him, having struck up conversations after finishing their chicken. The inattentiveness, as well as the scattered boos amid the supportive calls of Joe that welcomed Mr. Lieberman to the podium, convinced some that the three-term senator, criticized for months because of his continued support for the war in Iraq, may be vulnerable in the primary challenge he faces. Who came to his rescue? Senator Barack Obama, with a ringing endorsement. Senator Obama said, all but silencing the crowd, "I know that some of the party have differences with Joe. I'm going to go ahead and say it. It's the elephant in the room, and Joe and I don't agree on everything. But what I know is Joe Lieberman's a man with a good heart, with a keen intellect, who cares about the working families of America." Then, with applause beginning to build, he finished the thought, "I'm absolutely certain that Connecticut's going to have the good sense to send Joe Lieberman back to the United States Senate." That time, people cheered loudly. Lord have mercy. Well, there you go. No good deed goes unpunished, right, Mr. President? Huh? You rally behind. See, and his further irony, when Barack Obama first got to the Senate, Lieberman took him under his wing, so to speak, showed him the ropes, how to do things. Go over here, go over there. Here's where you take a leak. Here's where you hang your coat. Here's the regular food. Here's the kosher food. Wait a minute. You're not Jewish, are you? Hadassah, I got a colored in here. I don't know. What do I tell him? Lieberman took him under his wing. He really did. And took care of the young junior senator from Illinois. And now this. Doesn't it just... Oh, never mind.
You've got mail.
I do? Where? Good God, where did that come from? Is that the AOL God? Dean is in Los Angeles. Hey, Dean.
I've been accused of sounding like the AOL guy, actually. You've got mail.
Oh, my God! It's you!
Just kidding. You don't.
Oh, that's true. What's up, Dean?
I had a little anecdote I wanted to share. I don't get Fox where I live. I'm in L.A., in the heart of L.A.
Yeah.
I disconnected my cable about, a couple of years ago, and so got a converter box, and, oh, thank the Lord, I can't get Fox.
That, you must be a very well-rounded individual. I get it. It's there in high definition and non-high definition, but I can't go to it.
The odd thing is I don't get it every day, so I don't get the regular dosage of it.
Right.
And about a month ago, I had to go take my car in for servicing, and while I'm sitting in the lounge area at the dealership,
mm-hmm.
they had Fox on, Fox News, and... I just realized, oh my God, they're just over the top. When I read the little scrolling banner at the bottom of the page,
mm-hmm.
and it said, the authorities now investigating who authorized elementary school kids to force them to sing Obama songs. And I burst out laughing. A few other people in there, they turned their heads to look like, what was I laughing at? And
who in this country does not understand that the Fox Channel is nothing but a propaganda outlet run by one of the most fascist, global fascists on the planet? Rupert Murdoch, if he would have been alive in the 20s and 30s of the last century, this son of a bitch would have funded, single-handedly, he would have funded all of Hitler's moves. Murdoch hates Jews to begin with. His second biggest investor in Fox Channel is one of those Saudi princes. Murdoch was just born, about 80 years too late. Miserable bastard. Hey, thanks, Dean. I have to leave it there and boogie. We'll be back in a minute, True Seekers.
Watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Hey, by the way, when our program's over tonight, does Ben Burtt still stream The Horn, Bob Kincaid? Stick around after the after this program's over tonight. If you're listening online, if you're not listening online, just go to headonradionetwork.com. Isn't that it? Headonradionetwork.com. I believe that's it. And listen to a rebroadcast of Bob Kincaid's program from earlier this evening. I think it's on from 8 till 9, right? I think it just does an hour program, internet program. And listen to Bob, because he says some things about Lieberman that, of course, I can't say because I do an over-the-air program as well as the internet. But I got an email from Jude who said, be sure and listen to Bob Kincaid's program later on tonight. So, all right, I want to share this with you. This is Bill from Ottawa. He's from Canada, right? Let's see. I know Ottawa's the capital. It's not Ottawa, Illinois, or anything. Okay. The subject line is his take on the wars. Hi, Mike. Remember shortly after 9/11, Wes Clark, General Wes Clark, was told by someone at the Pentagon that, quote, we are going to attack five countries, end quote. Well, those plans are still there, and they're being executed even as I write this. Anarchy and chaos are but the tactics in this new imperial war. The strategy, as it has been for decades, is full-spectrum dominance of the Middle East. Full-spectrum dominance accomplishes several strategic goals. China is neutralized. Russia is contained. Israel becomes the regional hegemon. The Bush crime family makes a lot of money. And most importantly, Chulu gets to harvest the organs and the souls, lots of them. You know who that is. Oh, good. It's becoming pretty obvious that the destabilization of Pakistan is on and is going well. One might ask, what is the purpose of destabilizing Pakistan, a Muslim country with nuclear weapons? Well, even I think that the nuclear weapons in Pakistan are a problem. Forget Iran, who might get weapons. The Pakistanis have them. Most agencies agree that they have around 100 weapons. That's a lot. So what to do? Destabilize. Create a casus belli and then take them out. Unfortunately, the only sure way to do that is with nuclear weapons. Nuking Pakistan's nukes, or at least hitting them with a massive bombardment of fuel aerosol weapons, and the lovely MOABs, of course, the ensuing war and chaos will have the added benefit of kicking off the final battle between good and evil, or at least between the countries with oil versus the hegemon, America. Hegemon, America. Our shadowy masters know that Americans will put up with a lot. But if there's no gas for the cars, well, that would be bad. Five will get you 10. Obama sends in more troops. Lots more. Any takers? P.S. No American funds, please. Good luck, Bill from Ottawa. Chuklu. Chuklu. Kulu. Kulu. That's who is that? He, you know, I don't know. I forgot who that was, and he wrote back to me and said it's an H.P. Lovecraft character, right? From someplace in outer space. Dan is in Chantilly, Virginia. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mr. Malloy. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I tell you what, I'm sort of more left of center.
Uh-huh.
If I was a progressive, I'd be just totally dejected by this Obama thing, man. I mean, the more and more I think about it, man, I would have loved to see Hillary tear her bark off the Republicans. I mean, what Obama, he was faced with a ton, but it was a ton of opportunity. And basically what the opportunity he had was a progressive's wet dream. I mean, you had the bank, the regulatory system, you had them all dead to rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then he goes, I mean, he acts like a Reagan Democrat. I mean, I really believe he's a Reagan Democrat. And I even think he put Lieberman up to that. I think he wanted this public option. I don't think Obama.
No way, Dan.
Oh, he did. I think he did.
And you think Hillary, I'll tell you, a good friend of mine who has a website that should be read by everybody in America, that's BartCop, BartCop.com. Bart tried to warn everybody during the run-up to the election that Hillary should be elected. He said, look, yes, if Barack gets it, it'll be an historic moment, one long past due in America. But Barack Obama, and Bart Kopp tried to warn us all.
Yeah.
He said that Barack Obama did not have the killer instinct, or as you said, the ability to rip the bark off the Republicans the way Hillary does. And that was Bart Kopp's whole point. That first of all, Hillary had more experience with these filthy Republicans, but she also had more experience on the international stage. Now, Bart and I didn't discuss that among the two of us because I supported Obama. I supported Obama after it became apparent that he was going to get the nomination. You know, my man was Dennis Kucinich, and then, God forgive me, John Edwards. But, before he let everybody know he was trying to be a pimp, but he wasn't really pulling it off too well. He was just cheating on his sick wife. But, Bart Kopp tried to warn everybody. He really did. And I used to try to understand where Bart Kopp was coming from. Well, Bart Kopp is a street fighter. I mean, you know, I think Bart Kopp at one time was probably a member of a gang or something, you know, and he knows out there in Oklahoma, they do have streets in Oklahoma, right? Yeah. Okay. But Bart tried to warn us all and we didn't listen. And Bart said the same thing you're saying. So, you know, I guess folks should have listened to that.
And you know what, Mike, here's the thing. Think about it. And I remember hearing an analyst say this.
Mm-hmm.
Obama, nobody owes him anything. You can't, especially with the way he's trying to do this, and I understand it's counterintuitive to let the Senate run things, to look moderate, but look at what the Republicans are doing. The more moderate he looks, the more they turn up the rhetoric, the more. So they've moved everything. So everything he does, so now the public opposition is this radical takeover.
Mm-hmm.
So the more he moderates, the more he holds out for Republican votes, the more they turn up the rhetoric.
Exactly.
And then now you've moved everything. So you moved us so far away. You've done more to destroy the progressive movement than if you had just went single payer and basically said, hey, I'm going to give you the health care. You remember when in the debate, remember he wasn't for the, mandate.
Right,
he
right.
He was famously not for the mandate, but he had the rhetoric. He basically said, I'm going to give you the health care that we get. All he had to do is a real progressive with that message would have lost less than Obama's losing right now by this constant giving in, because nobody in that Senate or that Congress owes him a thing. That's everybody would have owed Hillary something. Everybody owes the Clinton something.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in Congress owes the Clinton something. And we would have got everything we needed. Well, I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, she had ideas. You remember when she was talking about putting a $300 billion, she wanted to stop all four coasts. Bam. That's progressive.
Well, yeah, but you know, the reason I didn't support her was because she was just another corporate Democrat. And I thought that Barack Obama was going to be different. And
yeah.
Not because of anything Barack Obama said, but because of what he didn't say. And then I was able to fill in the blanks. Like I said, I wanted a real progressive Democrat. That was Dennis Kucinich. But he had as much chance getting elected as I did.
Right.
So I don't know, man. You're probably just as right as Bart Kopp was, Dan. And we are paying through the rear end for the fact
now,
that.
We're going in. He's ushering in a right wing takeover. You know what I mean? At least under the other, you know, I mean, with a real progressive, we might have got kicked out after one term, but at least, you know, the country would have still been in the same right. Left center, right center. He's moving everything
radically to the right, because the more he modulates, you have to flood the zone with truth on the Republicans. And you know what I mean? The more they lie, the more you have to expose.
Well, and you know, I think the reason for all this, Dan, the Republicans are not interested in governing America. They're interested in destroying America, ripping it into a million pieces and have it replaced with Republican-style fascism. Damn them. Yeah, I got to leave there. Thanks, Dan. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. We'll be right back. Stay with us. To our crew, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Kathy Bay, and Ben Birch. Oh yeah, Kathy Bay, our executive producer.
Excuse me.
Kevin is in San Francisco. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, much better.
Oh, okay. Hey, I was really listening to your program last night, and I want to say it was excellent, the way you were telling people about the bad food they're eating in this country.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit like you. I'm an American, and I think we're being ripped off by the corporations and stuff. But let's just make it short. I'd just like to say to you, I'd like to share a few things with your listeners about the environment.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I've performed in 40 countries as a street performer, and I speak 6 languages, and I've seen some wonderful democracies out there. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I'd like to right now talk about is coffee.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay, America, number one, there's no such thing as an organic coffee that comes out of a paper filter or in a paper cup. Why they say organic coffee, it's not organic.
Wait, Kevin, that's a little bit too focused. You know, I thought you wanted to talk something about, you know, in broader terms, something about, you know, the environment.
Well, it is, because it's just every day. These people are destroying my rivers, my lakes. I've been gone for 25 years. I've come back. It is a polluted country.
Wait a minute, the coffee people are destroying your rivers?
Well, no, I'm just saying, for example, I'm trying to set them straight so they could change their ways. They'll throw away the fast food lifestyle and change it for a more friendlier lifestyle.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm trying to say, okay? I'm just trying to use an example.
Okay.
Okay, coffee, for example, the cups that the people drink out of it, it is made out of polystyrene. It is very close. It's connected to breast cancer. It's connected to many sicknesses. People do not know that here. They are giving it to their children. They are given. I am watching people walk into 7-Elevens, and they are giving their kids garbage, just like you say. And I just think it's great you keep on that, on those topics, and let people know that we can eat much healthier, which would be better for medical insurance.
Well, actually, you know, I just kind of touched on that subject. That's a whole topic that I usually really don't get into, diet and Frankenfood and you know, how companies like Archer Daniels, Midland, and Monsanto have ruined the food supply in this country, because I assume that most people who listen to this program are fully aware of that, and There's really no...
Hey, can I ask you, have you done a lot of international traveling?
Not a lot. Some, yeah.
Not a lot, huh? Because you sound like you do, and, you know, it seems like you're light years ahead of the rest of the people.
You know, you sound like Jesse Ventura.
Who is he?
The former governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura.
Oh, I'm not political at all. I'm a performing artist.
No, I'm just saying, you know, you sound like Jesse Ventura. He and Arnold Schwarzenegger were in that movie. What was that movie about the invisible? What was Predator? Did you ever see that movie Predator?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, well, you know, Schwarzenegger has the lead, but one of the guys on his patrol that are sent into for a whole different reason, sent into the jungles to find this renegade band of Central American revolutionaries, I guess. Well, Jesse Ventura is in that movie. He's a former governor of Minnesota. Where have you been? You never heard of Jesse Ventura?
I've been traveling for 25 years.
Oh, well then.
I lived in countries where the governments are actually friendly enough to test the people's drugs before they take them, because they don't want their citizens taking poison.
Well, right? that makes sense. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I've been to countries where, last week, a 7-year-old girl was thrown in a landfill and was used in Georgia. I mean, these things would not happen in this country if prostitution was legal and people weren't so damn perverted.
I don't think prostitution has that much to do with pedophilia or butchering children.
Does, because when a man doesn't have sex, he becomes
No, Kevin, you're sounding like somebody who's a little bit screwy here. You know, men who attack and sexually attack and then murder a child, that has nothing to do with adults, whether it's a prostitute a John relationship or a husband wife or husband girlfriend or wife boy. Pedophilia and murdering of children has you could have prostitution legal all day, and that has nothing whatsoever to do with the rape and murder of children. I don't know, Kevin. I appreciate you checking in, though, okay? Mm. I know who Jesse Ventura is. Right? All right, did you have fun tonight? Was it a good time? Wasn't this a great program tonight? Tell your friends, and when you do that, tell your friends that it's time to buy a podcast to this program. Go to MikeMalloy.com, and the information's on the front page. Because we would hate to fold after the first year. We're coming up on that, aren't we? Yeah, another 4 or 5 months. So subscribe to The Malloy Show. It's very important. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Is your credit score?